Okay, our next speaker is Kevin Dejeuner. He's the CEO of Cascadia Scientific. He holds degrees in software engineering and control systems and spent a significant part of his career designing and implementing firmware for high horsepower electronic control units used in mining. His specialties include industrial Internet of Things, product management, and real-time and embedded controls. He has 12 years of experience supporting mining clients across multiple continents. Please welcome Kevin.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. As discussed, my name is Kevin Dejeuner. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Cascadia Scientific, and I'm thrilled for this opportunity to address the conference. So thanks for sticking around till the bitter end. So today, in terms of what I'll be discussing, I'll provide a bit of an introduction to myself, the company that I'm here representing. I'll talk about machine learning in the context of this conversation. I feel like machine learning is a great buzzword. You've probably heard it a million times and maybe not been introduced enough into what actually we're talking about. And I'll also define some of the sustainability objectives that we're trying to pursue with machine learning models. And then I'll take you through, a journey on if you were to look to build a model to your benefit, what that would involve, what steps you would take, and how that would work. And then I'll talk a bit about how to evaluate a model. I think one of the things that's really worth talking about is as you pursue these things, how do you gain confidence that you've built something that's actually useful and beneficial to yourself and your team? And then I'll talk about some applications. So I'll go through three examples that we've done with real customers in the last year or so. Very different examples, I think, will really drive the point home. So with that, let's get into it. So Cascadia Scientific was founded in 2018. Really, when the company was founded, we were really there to build a business around adding high-precision fuel meters to in-service mining vehicles to start to understand and measure how much fuel these machines are burning. We didn't know exactly how we were going to use that to derive maximum customer value, and in the 5 years since, we've understood that machine learning and modeling and analytics have really been the key to unlocking the value of that approach. So really, we've really matured from a strict instrumentation and data company into an ML company. We now have 10 customers, we've got customers in 10 countries on 5 continents. For myself, I'll just say that I've had a sustainability thread through my entire career. I started in water, moved into over-the-road trucking in the hydrogen space, and then eventually moved into diesel measurement and sustainability gains on the mining side, and that's where I've been for about the last 10 or 12 years. So let's just talk a bit about machine learning. And in this context, when I talk about machine learning, I'm talking about this. It's a study that's a subspecialty of artificial intelligence. We had some nice examples of ChatGPT before. But in this case, it's not nearly as scary as the robots that will become our robot overlords. Really, we're talking about very specific tools that build mathematical models that can predict outcomes or provide decision guidance. And the idea is that these methods improve your model by ingesting more and more data to improve performance. And again, performance is a very benign definition here. We're talking about reducing error and increasing predictive accuracy. So these methods are commonly used to produce model. They're very good in situations where there isn't a readily available algorithmic solutions. So if I ask everyone here to define for me a formula that would predict fuel consumption in terms of distance and time and tonnage and vertical travel and who was driving and when it happened and what was the temperature, I don't think anybody here could naturally produce an equation to answer that question. And that's a great example of when machine learning models are very helpful. And so, if you've been hearing terms in your business or in your work or from your vendors about linear regression or random forest, neural nets, gradient boosting, these are the kinds of techniques that we use. So Cascadia, what we do is we train these models for our customers, and then we help them interrogate them to their benefit. And then in terms of sustainability and the objectives we're trying to achieve, really the biggest one for Cascadia is really reducing the energy required to move a ton of material. Obviously, in the now state, that means reduce fuel usage to move those tons. But as we move into the next state, that same benefit may have different aspects to it. For example, maybe we can increase runtime between recharge. Maybe it means we can reduce the output required on an in-service charging system as we move towards electrification. And so for Cascadia, thinking about what's next when diesel becomes only part of the solution and possibly eventually none of it, using these same tools and techniques to manage energy usage, not just diesel fuel. In terms of reduced emissions, obviously, if we reduce fuel, as we just discussed, you're going to put less emission in the air. But some of the work we've been doing lately has related to renewable and biodiesels. And in that case, you know, the actual CO2 output may be very similar to a traditional diesel. But when you incorporate the life cycle emissions, when you back out the sequestration that happens when you recapture that carbon to make the diesel, you actually get a pretty significant net benefit. So looking at how to understand that, understand what that does to your total ESG picture. And then I think it would be wrong to mention machine learning and model training without talking about the work that's done in terms of predictive failure. That's not where we spend most of our energy, but I think it's worth, you know, setting the table in this context that a lot of the work that's happening on the mining side is training models that can predict when your machine is going to go down. We are involved in some of that work, specifically around training models around oil health and oil longevity. So now that I've kind of just defined machine learning in this context and what I'm talking about in terms of sustainability, some of the applications that we regularly run for our customers, the first would be a normalized efficiency assessment of haulage assets. So right now, if I was to ask you if you've got 20 trucks or 50 trucks or 100 trucks, which ones are the most and least efficient and effective, you might look at your last month's total fuel bill, but that really doesn't answer the question if you don't know how hard that machine was worked. So understanding exactly, and when I say normalized, I'm talking about fuel per ton in the context of the way that machine was used. And so that's a big part of what we do, and I'll give a specific example in a bit. Another example would be normalized efficiency assessments of operator practice. And again, the same things, you know, you can't just compare operators based on tons moved and fuel burned, because there's any number of things that can impact that conversation. The truck that they were driving, the condition of the mine when they were operating, and many other things. Another, you know, common utilization of our tools is to validate third-party product efficiency claims. And so obviously, going right after the guys at Crown, you know, that would be a clear example. So they've made some very powerful claims about, you know, how they can transform your utilization and lower your ESG outputs. You know, how can you get confidence at a company level that in fact you're redeeming the value that was demonstrated elsewhere? And so that's a very, you know, common use of these tools. Again, assessing real-time oil condition. And then the last one is optimizing mine operations and mine planning strategies. So when you're deciding if you're going to super elevate a corner or change how you're going to crown roads or how you're going to set speed limits, how do you actually understand and measure what impacts and implications those changes are having on your mine site? So, you know, training models that can actually identify the impact of these specific nuanced elements of your mine operation is really where we, you know, come to bring benefit. So if you wanted to benefit from a machine learning model from your mindset, how would you go about it? Well, you know, obviously we'd love to help you, but if you were to do it yourself, and some of you I'm sure are, you know, the first thing I would say to do is define a question or a hypothesis. And so just as a thought experiment, let's go through this example. Let's say, you know, one of the most common examples we pursue is identifying which trucks in my fleet are overly consumptive based on the specific kinds of work they're performing. So that would be the first step. The second step would be saying, okay, if I want to understand or get an answer to that problem, let's define the model target that's going to help me answer that question. And so often we talk about normalized liters per cycle, especially if we're talking about you know, a single configuration of truck type, if we were looking at a mixed manufactured fleet of different sizes that take a different tack. So let's build a model that's going to predict how many liters we're going to consume in a cycle with specific characteristics. The next thing you'd want to do is assess and select the model inputs, the thing you're going to train your model with. So if I was going to train a model to tell me which of my trucks were overly consumptive, I'd want to tell the model what truck was being used. I'd want to identify the tonnage on a haul cycle basis. I'd want to identify haulage durations, distances, and vertical profiles in both the loaded and unloaded conditions. I'd want to identify the zone where the work was performed. I'd want to understand idle and queuing time. When in the seasonality profile of the mine did the work get performed? But the way that you actually approach this is with something like this. So your data scientist would probably look at a correlation matrix. If you see a number that's close to positive one or negative one, what that's telling you is that the input variable is correlated to the thing you're trying to predict. It also can tip you off to things that are correlated besides your input and output variable, so you can avoid multicollinearity. Now, this isn't a stats lesson or an ML, you know, course, so I'm going to move on. But the idea here is you look at what you have access to and decide what you want to teach your model with. The next thing would be to choose your modeling technology. So, you know, often we use GBTs. They're really good for dealing with systems with nonlinearity. And when we're talking about operator practice or truck condition, You know, other things as well. We definitely want to not limit ourselves to purely linear relationships, and so that's what takes us away from, say, a linear regression model. The next thing that's really important is understanding how sensitive does your model need to be if it's going to actually answer the question that you set out to answer. So, for example, if you're going to train a model with, you know, plus or minus 5% error, and you're looking for a change of 2 or 3%, well, then you're not really on the right track. And so once you've established and answered these questions, you can get on to training the model and evaluating performance. So I mentioned before, especially as some people are new to this, how can you gain trust in the model you've trained and the system that you're developing? So the way that we typically go about training models and making sure that they're relevant and accurate is we'll take, let's say, 80% of the data that's available, and we'll train our model with 80% of the data. We'll withhold 20%. When the model is built, we'll then evaluate the correctness or the error in the model by feeding that last 20% to see how close the prediction of the model is to the outcomes in those 20% that were never used for model training. And so that's an example of what you see in that top scatter plot. What you really want to see is you want to see those dots on that x equals y line, the line of predicted equals measured outcome. You want to see that it trends from top to bottom in a similar way. And then if you really want to quantify the accuracy, what you can do is you can randomly repeat that process of training with withholding a data set, and then test against the withheld data set. And then, for example, if your error is within a certain boundary 19 times out of 20, there you've got your 95% confidence interval. The second thing you can do is you can also just look at very well understood relationships. So I think anyone here could tell me if I said if your Hall cycle gets longer, do you accept fuel consumption to go up or down? I don't think it would take a rocket scientist to say that it would go up. And so you can actually look at the model and visualize specific relationships between your input parameters and your output parameters. So those bottom two scatters are showing strong positive correlations between predicted fuel consumption and, in one case, cycle distance. And in the second one, it's vertical travel, cycle vertical travel. So again, these are all things that can give you some comfort and confidence that the model is telling a story that not only mathematically seems to hold true, but also, you know, makes sense to someone who knows the business and understands the cycle. So, you know, let's go through some case studies, and we can start putting, you know, to give you an example of how we as a company have been putting these things to practice. So I'll talk about three. The first one will be targeted truck restorative maintenance. Then I'll talk about a recently completed initiative where we helped a mine make a decision about fleet replacement or upgrade. And then I'll talk about how we use this for operator performance management for one of our largest customers as well. So the first one I'll talk about is targeted restorative maintenance. So on a weekly basis for this customer, we produce models that examine the recent history of operation in their mine site. So the model, again, you can see the actual fit of X equals Y on the bottom there. And so what we're looking for is trucks that are consuming more than the model would predict for the activity that they're performing. And so the model knows what truck performed what work, and what it produces is a first to worst ranking of truck efficiency. And we express this in different ways. For example, we'll tell the customer what its rank was relative to the rest of the fleet. We'll tell them what the penalty was in terms of gallons per cycle. So what did the model tell us was the impact of running truck X in terms of a gallons per cycle penalty? We'll also say what, you know, based on the work it performed, what was its expected consumption and what was its actual consumption. And then based on this information, we've defined kind of a custom level one efficiency recovery service where they inspect certain things, change certain things, and then report back to us. And so we've had some pretty exciting results. So in general, you know, typical findings often relate to things like fuel leaks, clogged filters, failed injectors, problems with cooling. When we've had, you know, machines go in for this kind of a service and we've A, not redeemed a benefit, or B, they didn't find anything conclusive, we'll do a level two service, which actually involves not so much a service, but we'll actually interrogate data if it's available from like a system like MindCare or PL Elite, where we have lots of real-time data, and we'll go through and look for patterns in the data set that might inform what's going on. And in this case, we found problems with failing engines and other deeper problems. The next thing we do, which I think is really cool, is we'll actually assess the impact of the intervention. So we'll train another model, but this model gets a new piece of information. It gets to know if a Hall cycle was performed in the weeks leading up to a maintenance recovery intervention, if it was performed in the weeks immediately following the maintenance recovery intervention, or if it was taken from a truck that wasn't involved in restorative maintenance at all. And if you see that shift on the far left side of my slide, that shift in distribution is actually the model telling us that the cycles that were performed in the weeks after the intervention showed about a 3 liter per cycle savings that it's attributing to that intervention work. Okay, you can see examples of other findings. The middle slide here is actually a video or the middle image. And so this was a truck that had a fuel leak at the filter. I don't know if you can see it from where you're sitting. You see the drips of fuel coming off of the filter. And this is at idle. So you can imagine how much fuel would be coming off of this thing if it was revved up and under production. So our model didn't know what was wrong, but it told us that this truck was consuming more fuel than the model would predict for the type of work it was performing. It came down for maintenance and there's your smoking gun. Okay. So in general, the annualized benefit of these interventions, including ones that didn't have positive findings, so this averages all targeted interventions for maintenance efficiency recovery, was about 4,800 gallons recovered or gallons saved on a per intervention basis, on an annualized basis. So the second use case I'll talk about is support we provided to a Peruvian miner to decide on a fleet upgrade decision. So this was an operator of a large mixed manufactured fleet, and they were considering repowering, replacing, rebuilding engines as they move forward with their goals. They were considering electric drive versus mechanical drive. They were considering engine upgrades versus engine rebuilds versus engine replacements. They were considering various payload sizes in terms of if they go ultra class or just large class haul trucks. Multiple OEMs were involved, and various revisions of the same truck technology. And so what we did is we trained models for them. The first one really was looking at a model that could tell us the efficiency impact in gallons per ton based on each one of the trucks in this study. Okay, and so what you're seeing on the left side is that prediction. So you can see that the truck in red is showing the strongest predicted savings on a gallons per ton basis, and then all the way up through the different list here. So I can tell you that the truck in red was a 980E-5 haul truck. And what's interesting is the truck in pink, I've redacted the rest, but the truck in pink was a much older generation of the 980E. And so you can see that they've actually made very significant, either through the newness of the vehicle or improvements in the design engineering of the truck, significant reduction in terms of fuel per ton moved in this fleet. Now, obviously, you can't make a decision to purchase the truck based purely or only on efficiency. So the truck, the graph on the right is showing the relative productivity in terms of tons per hour based on these different classes and ages of trucks. And what I thought was really interesting on this one is that red bar fits right in between the two pink ones, which is effectively all the same truck model. They're all 980Es, just not the same generation number. And so based on based on these combined findings of efficiency and productivity, this mine made a purchasing decision. And so they announced the purchase of 20 brand new Komatsu 980-5s for this setting. So the third one I'll talk about is operator performance management. There's been a lot of really great conversation today about operator performance management. You know, certainly where we have our strongest foot forward is related to the efficiency side of things. I think we've got some work to do to keep up with some of the work done at FMI on things like safety and certainly on productivity. But as we move forward, there's two ways that we look at this. We do retrospective analysis, very similar to what I described for the truck analysis, where we ask the model to tell us a ranking of operators by their efficiency score and also the penalty or savings and benefit attributed to an individual operator's performance. But much more recently, we've launched a short interval control tool. And this is something that I'm really excited about. This is the first place we've kind of publicly discussed it. And the idea here is that we train a model over recent history, but we don't tell the model who's operating the vehicle. And then what we do during the shift is every haul cycle that gets completed, as soon as that haul cycle is finished, the system is going to compare the measured consumption for the cycle to the predicted consumption for that same cycle. And what we're looking for are the individuals who are consistently underperforming the model by the greatest amount compared to their cohort of operators. So for example, it doesn't really matter if you beat or lose to the model. What really matters is on a given day, if the mine is particularly efficient or inefficient, what you want to look for are the operators who are having a hard time operating, and that's an opportunity for kind of a real-time radio call-out. You know, hey, you're having some trouble today. We're seeing you're having some difficulties. And so combining that with some of the operator activity detections that we've heard about today, things like driving with the dump body elevated, applying the service brake at speed, these kinds of things, we've had quite a bit of success in moving from a a long-term retrospective analysis, which doesn't work nearly as well for humans as for trucks, right? With a truck, if your truck has been bad for the last 2 weeks, you take it down, you maintain it. If you had an operator that was, on average, not that efficient 2 weeks ago, that doesn't really lend itself to a meaningful and productive conversation with that operator. But when you can get on the radio and say, hey, you know, we're picking up on some data that you're having some trouble today, how can we help you, how can we improve this? I think it goes a lot farther. So again, using these tools on the retrospective side, the initiative or it's really involved kind of sharing with the operators their score in a similar way to the operator scorecard, also getting letters when they fall into kind of the bottom quartile of the efficiency band. And what we've been able to measure by, again, modeling after these interventions is roughly a 0.4 gallon per hour shift after contact with an operator has been made. And we're looking for an annualized benefit of 175,000 gallons for this one operation. On the short interval control side, so we're really excited to be going live with a dispatch style environment, fully staffed, where they'll be watching for, again, outliers on the efficiency side, as well as those events as they propagate to the system and become available for taking action when we identified negative activities. The last piece of work on that side that we're working on now is being able to not just look for outcomes in terms of problematic efficiency or negative outcomes in terms of behaviors, but actually training models to identify the best possible operating parameters and then guide operators to do that work. Okay. So, actually, I'm not going to need all those 5 minutes, to be honest. So in terms of some conclusions I can draw, the first thing I'll say is that ML haulage models can be used to accurately explain many of the nuanced details of mine haulage. You know, I've talked about operator impact and truck impact. There's roads, there's standard operating procedures, any number of things that you want to consider, whether it's new formulations or chemistry in terms of your fueling, your lubricants. We can be the tool that you use to guide your decision making about your decarbonization future, right? That's really what we want to be. You know, I've heard people say if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. I think that's very true. But I'd also point out that the other saying goes is no one's ever gotten taller by being measured. Equally true. So what that means is that we can be the tool by which you assess and evaluate and pursue your goals around now state decarbonization. And really what that means though is together we would want to work with you in guiding decision making to make those changes that you can make now that are cost effective, that are going to bring about those carbon reductions. The second thing I'll say is that I think that these benefits can be benefit not just in the now state, but they may be even more important as we move towards a decarbonized future. And I mentioned off the top that maybe this means longer runtime between recharge. Maybe that means lower demands on charging initiatives. So, I don't see this as a business that goes away when diesel goes away. I think we've got a bright future as we become experts in energy management, and I don't really care what that energy is, as long as I've got time to make to adjust as those changes take place. So really, that's the presentation. I hope it was valuable. I hope today, if my goal, I guess, would be that if you've heard about machine learning and AI, conference after conference after conference, I hope that today, leaving this talk, you might have a bit more of an actual tactical understanding of what we're doing and how it works. And I'll be around after to discuss things if there's any questions. So I'll go back to the slide. So yeah, so please, I take your questions.
Questions, anyone? So the short interval model is available now, or it will be available soon?
No, it is available now. So it's going into production. Like it's available in our platform, and it's going into production with our first customer currently. So it is available. If you signed up today and you want it, you would have access to it.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.